Well, it's time again for some Big Head Mode. Tom is in the studio with me. Tom, you excited to talk about Batman? We're going to be talking about Batman Arkham Knight?
Not really.
We're not really talking about it? You're not excited to talk about it?
I'm not excited.
No? Okay.
I'm sure you'll talk about it.
We're talking about completionism, which is a thing that you and I have both dabbled in for many different types of games. What is it that drives a person to need to complete a game apart from a deep, profound sadness within them? That's all coming up on Two Triple R's only gaming show, Big Head Mode. Welcome to Big Head Mode. I'm Ben O'Brien, joined in the studio tonight by Tom McClurkin. Tom, let's talk games. Right off the bat, have you been playing anything? It's been a while since we saw each other, you know, and your gaming habits have become less predictable of late. I think that's fair to say.
I've been playing Binding of Isaac Rebirth.
Really?
Yes.
How are you finding that? I mean, see, there we go, already.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact...
Unpredictable.
But the sheer fact that you're not playing Halo... Who knows? So yeah. So what's your impressions of that?
I love it,
mm-hmm.
and I'm actually halfway through a run at the moment. And
in a game, not in life, people. Just
yeah.
saying.
No, I've never run in real life.
This is a gaming show.
And I didn't want to come out tonight because it was really good. Okay, so specifically,
yeah.
I had telekinetic powers. With laser technology, as well as
again in the game.
Yes.
Don't freak out. Yeah. This is in the game.
Yeah. And I was destroying poo, in the game.
Right.
Okay. And
thank you for clarifying that bit too.
Yeah.
Again.
And killing my mother in the game.
Yeah.
And fighting Satan. I wasn't actually up to
it's
that.
It's all of your favorite things. In this. That's the trifecta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I haven't played this game, so I mean you're pulling me in, Tom.
Yeah.
You've got me hooked.
Good. It's good. Well,
are you playing this on PC or?
Yeah, I'm playing it on PC, and I bought it on Steam the other day. You know, I said, all right, it's the Steam summer sale. I will have a quick browse.
Mm.
I've got too many games. I won't buy anything. I'll just see what's there.
Yeah.
And ended up buying 5 games. And so I banned myself from going to the Steam homepage.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
The Xbox Ultimate sale thing is on now as well, you know, which is their online sale.
Mm.
And I'm just so glad that Xbox One hasn't got a big library, really, still. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there, but it's sort of that thing of, like, a lot of them you've played or they're on other consoles.
Mm.
Then, you know, I'm replaying one of the old Batman games, and I go, oh, of course. Like, there's a sale on Xbox 360 as well, and that's the one that gets me.
The
one where you're like, oh my god, 50% off this and this and this. I played it ages ago. I kind of enjoyed it. Should I? Why not? Yeah, I'll have it. You know,
you're buying games that you already own, or
oh, I've done that before. Yeah, yeah, totally. Well, look, the games that I've already owned, but perhaps the games that I played once upon a time and then traded in or something like that, and then you sort of see it 75% off, and you're like, oh, $10. I'd replay that for $10. And so, then you go, no, I won't, actually. No, because that's on the Xbox 360, which I turn on every, like, you know, 3 months.
Yeah. Just
out of, oh, yeah, that's right. There was something before next gen. The one thing I did pick up, which I played a little bit of, it was my first time playing it too, was Goat Simulator on Xbox One.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's $9 at the moment in this sale. And I thought, hey, you got to jump on the bandwagon sooner or later, and that is a crazy game.
Yeah,
that is a crazy game.
That bandwagon has already left town, but I'm glad you're enjoying it.
That bandwagon left town with a goat stuck to the back of it by a long tongue.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it, but it's also, I mean, there's nothing to do in it.
You've got
everything. Like, if you know, it's so. I mean, I get that that's the appeal of it, but it's so unfocused and just raw mayhem.
Mm.
that you don't even... It's not like a game like Saints Row where, you know, you're meant to run around and muck around and do silly stuff where you go, oh, I'm going to try this now, I'm going to try this. You just, like, you just move in a direction and just mash buttons because it's like, whew, now I'm licking at stuff. Now I'm climbing up a wall. This is crazy. Oh, I hit an explosive. Now I'm flying through the air. Okay, yeah. Stuff's happening.
Yeah.
Pretty fun, though. Multiplayer. I want to play multiplayer. I feel like that'll be... interesting. It's something I think would be a lot of fun to bring out at bonus stage at some point too.
I've played multiplayer with my 5-year-old nephew, and he didn't get it.
I can't quite say that I get it at all.
he thought you were an actual goat, and the idea of the game is to not run into everything and destroy it. And so he kept calling me over and was like, "Okay, come and stand by me, and we'll like bleat together." And so I did that.
Try and blend in. It's goat society.
Yeah. You know, just go stand behind the fence and be a good goat, which is not the point of it at all.
Oh, look, Tom, I've got 10 goat points for being a good goat.
You get a gold goat star.
It is a bit like the people who play GTA, but as law-abiding citizens.
Who would do that?
Idiots, I mean, Tom. No, some people do it. Some people do it.
Yeah, but like for more than 5 seconds. I mean, we've all sort of thought of that, you know, thought of doing that Skyrim run where you don't steal anything. I've tried
that Skyrim run.
Yeah. Did you finish it?
I've said it before on the show. I did a Geralt character in Skyrim. And one of the big things about witches in their books is that they don't kill dragons. And it was great because I didn't kill dragons. And so I never progressed with the main story. But I sort of went, well, that's fine. I've played the main story before. Like, I don't need to for this run through. And so I just ended up kind of going on other adventures and just waiting to see how my stupid strict rules that I put on my character were going to... Now, let's not get too off topic, actually, because when I think about it...
There's a topic?
We're talking about completionism a lot tonight. And Skyrim is a great example of the game really challenged me. I wanted to be a completionist of that game.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that just never ending. All those little miscellaneous side quests just...
What are you talking about?
It's Skyrim.
Yeah, dude. Get on a walkthrough and finish it off.
I don't like using walkthroughs in those kind of games.
There's your problem.
Yeah.
There's your problem.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about not wanting to come in because you were playing Binding of Isaac. I've been playing so much Batman Arkham Knight that when I was driving in... And I got a bunch of green lights. I went, Riddler trophies. They're everywhere. I've got to grab them all. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Not the game. I enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Riddler trophies might be one of the most intense collectibles in any game.
Well, you said this to me before. What is it about Riddler trophies that get you so excited?
I wouldn't say excited. They're intense. I mean, some of them are great. You definitely feel... I mean, think about any game that has intense collectibles and puzzles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine a superhero world where one villain's whole power is just the ability to create them. Like, that's his power. Yeah. So, it's definitely a great way to wrap a narrative around this arbitrary thing that every game has. You know what I mean? Because while you're trying to collect them, you're constantly getting Riddler in your voice going, Batman, you'll never be able to solve these puzzles. And it's like, Riddler, I'm fucking going there and I'll snap you in the face. Like, really gets you, like, you know, being taunted while you're combing a huge open world to find tiny little statues. I mean, the games that you've tried completion, imagine it, like just trying to get achievements in Halo. If Halo sassed you for every attempt where you failed to get an achievement. Oh, another multiplayer match where you didn't get that kill-tacular. Ooh.
I kind of feel like I have been in that situation before.
It's just the voice in your own head that's telling you that.
Yeah. And there was an achievement in Halo Reach. What was it called? There. But you had to jump off a cliff.
A monument to all your sins.
No, monument
to... Is that the one?
No, that was completing it on Legendary, I think.
If you came to hear me beg?
No.
I know exactly which one you mean.
You do.
Because I tried it for ages where you have to sprint run off that ledge and land in an assassination on the elite at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it...
Pillars of Autumn.
That's the level. I know, but go on. Just shout out random things. Rabbit green bunny face.
That's not a Halo thing at all, Tom.
You're not a Halo thing. You're a devil thing.
I would have been your daddy. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's definitely one where I can imagine Cortana or someone just going, really?
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
But, I mean, have you ever done that where you've just sort of banged your head against the wall for an achievement or a collectible or something?
It's called Dark Souls. that's what that entire game is. Mm. Just banging your head against the wall.
But,
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, I'd say yes. I definitely have. I mean, the entire Lego franchise is sort of that, you know. There are 200 things you've got to collect, and it's just, you go, okay, let's get to it.
But
let's
more than
get
that,
cracking.
There are 200 games, and they're all the exact same.
Yeah.
And it's just over and over and over again.
Look, we'll go to some music. Let's come back after this and talk a little bit of news. News. This is Evening the Odds from the Arkham Knight soundtrack by Nick Arundel and David Buckley. We'll be back after this on 2RRR 88.5 FM. That was Evening the Odds from the Arkham Knight soundtrack. Tom, you feeling Batmaned up? You feeling Batman ready?
I was just telling you in the ad break how little I care about Batman.
I know you were. But I still think there's cool stuff in that game that you would definitely appreciate. We'll get to that later.
Hmm.
But for now, some news. I wanted you to think.
Is there a sting?
No, I wanted you to think there was.
Oh, okay.
But there totally wasn't.
Can I make one up?
Expectant. Yeah, go for it.
Da-da-da-da. News.
That's right, news. First off, Jeff Goldblum is coming to a video game near you. Do you see this?
No.
Tell me
all about it.
Predictably,
I love
since
Jeff
we're
Goldblum.
Getting a Treyarch. A new Treyarch Call of Duty game, Black Ops 3. That means zombies. They've announced the new zombies today. And would you believe one of the playable characters, Jeff Goldblum?
I would not believe. Is that
Pix or it hasn't? No! That was a lie. Again, I got you twice.
Oh, God.
No, so you're playing as Jeff Goldblum, Heather Graham. Remember her?
Sort of.
Maybe.
I know the name.
Excused if you don't, because not the 90s anymore. Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
You should know.
Yeah.
Neil McDonough, a guy you probably wouldn't know the name of, but you'd absolutely recognize his face.
Where's he from?
What's
he been in?
It's all over. It's all over. He plays Dum Dum Dugan in the Marvel films. He plays...
Dum Dugan?
He plays...
That's not a real character.
That's a real character.
You're making it up.
Yeah, that's a real character.
Really?
Guy wears the bowler hat. Captain America. He's forgettable. comic fans know what I'm talking about. He played a villain in Justified.
Really?
And other things. That's Neil McDonough. If you're listening, Mr. McDonough, we'd love you to come on the show. You're a great actor. Very accomplished. Another guy who I don't know, Robert Picardo. Look.
No. He was Dum Dum Goose in...
Dum Dum Goose.
Yeah. Isn't that it?
No.
That's what he said.
Dum Dum Dugan. Sorry, listeners. Tom just doesn't know his 60s Marvel stuff, does he? All right? Dum Dum Dugan, World War II fighter of the Howling Commandos, good mates with Nicholas Fury.
You are making this up.
I wouldn't lie to you, Tom. It's the sound of dubious light. Or is it? So it's set in the 40s. It's all sort of film noir style. It's called The Shadows of Evil. And the coolest thing from it, based on the trailer, which we put on our Facebook page, it's a good trailer, is it looks really narrative driven, which I like. Cutscenes, sort of immersive events that seem to happen.
Zombies?
Like at one point, there's a scene where one of the player characters turns into some weird tentacled monster. Mm. And there's a lot of set in the 40s and a lot of zombies. But as you go on, it looks like the monsters are really getting crazy and sort of almost Lovecraftian. A lot of tentacles, a lot of insect things.
Mm.
It looks pretty cool. It looks pretty cool.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things with the zombie games. It was always the same zombies, and they just took more bullets, which was kind of frustrating. So that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm down with that.
I'm on board. I mean, they had me at Goldblum, but let's see where we go.
You know, I was talking to someone the other day who was telling me how good she was at playing zombies, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, what wave did you get up to? And she was like, oh, only like wave 8 on my own, but with other people... who were really good, I'd get up to, like, wave 50. And it was like, yeah, dude, but you suck at zombies.
Well, I mean...
can you claim that? If you're playing with good people, that doesn't make you a good gamer.
It could, though. She could be really good support, I guess. But also, like, it's hard to get far on your own in Zombies. Well, I mean, I would say it is. Once you get to that...
I think it is, unless you know the tricks.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And then once you do, then it's very easy to get very far.
I just instinctively don't trust anyone who says I'm really good at anything in games. It's sort of like, really? Because I'm hearing a lot of talk and not a lot of action. Yeah. You know, the people who I know who are good at games, they don't think they're good at games. They just play games. Yeah, I play games. You
reckon?
Know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
All the people I know who do all the raids and Destiny, all that kind of like, all the people who kind of tend to obsessively play that hard difficulty, high level stuff.
I've got
play games. They don't go, hey man, I'm a mad hot Destiny player. I've done all the raids. Yeah, it's just like they're just like, yeah, I play games.
I disagree because I mean I've got my Halo KD rating on my business card.
Yeah. You're a special case though, Tom, because you are what we in the business call a jerk. Is that not true?
That's maybe true.
Speaking of jerks, girlfriend drugged so man can keep playing video games.
What?
A 23-year-old man has been fined by a German court after drugging his girlfriend so that he could play some video games with a friend. This is in the Westdeutsche Allgemeine Zeitung report. Local paper, says the unnamed man committed the crime last year when his girlfriend arrived home late to find him playing consoles with a buddy. She'd be hoping for a quiet night's rest, not just two men shouting at TV. So the man went and prepared her a special cup of tea, which was, of course, drugged, and she slept until noon the next day.
And I believe she missed the interview for her dream job.
Well, and this is what she said. Then I got up and drove to work, although I was still nodding off again and again. I like this line. That said by the woman, now the guilty party's ex-girlfriend. Yeah, you'd hope so. You get drugged by your boyfriend so he can play games? Probably, yeah.
Look, we've all thought about it, but props to this man for actually doing it. Oh, no, wait, that's not the angle we should be taking. Bad boy.
It's just like, you know, she comes home, I really wanted to sleep, guys. And the boyfriend just going, hey. Hey, wait! I've got a great idea where everyone wins. You just didn't think that next step ahead. You didn't think, what's she gonna think when she wakes up 3 days from now with a Rip Van Winkle style beard,
but it made
long fingernails?
It made perfect sense. I mean, he hadn't been using all of those roofies since he got a girlfriend.
That's true.
It's the perfect union for sleazy men.
Yeah. I don't think this is a sleazy guy, Tom. I think this is just a dumb guy. dumb guy who's probably doesn't have a long period of time in relationships before he does something dumb, like drugging them or, you know,
what other things
stealing money from them.
Yeah.
You complained about your job was stressing you out, so I got you fired. I called up your boss and told him you'd been stealing. I don't know. Look, let's try and keep an eye on that guy and just see where life takes him.
Yeah. Creative douchebag boyfriend.
Again, speaking of douchebags, the Sega boss has acknowledged
good news for me?
No. Sega boss has acknowledged that they betrayed trust and they pledge better console games. That's great. You're only 15 years too late, you dickhead! I mean, come on! See, like, Sonic used to be... Sonic could run circles, literally, around Mario. Mario's a fat little plumber, all right? He's a dumb little plumber. All he could do was jump and hit blocks. Sonic was getting rings. He was getting emeralds.
He had spiky hair.
He liked chili dogs and he wore red sneakers. The world was his oyster, Tom. The world was his bloody oyster. And then those big wigs over at Sega couldn't handle a little thing I like to call 3D graphics. Well, welcome to the real world, guys. Okay? you know, according to this bloke's where is his name? Whatever. According to this guy, Hajime Satomi, he says, "We did our best to build a relationship of mutual trust with older fans of Sega, but looking back, there have been some titles that have partially betrayed that trust in the past 10 years.
Mm.
I'm really curious to know what they've been doing to build the relationship. I mean, was that Sonic game where Sonic turned into a giant werehog? Was that building back trust with your core fans?
Maybe that Sonic
was
game where
Silver, the telepathic hedgehog from the future, was that what part of the trust building plan was that in, Mr. Sega, Captain Sega? How hard is it to make it good? Just give me Sonic.
You know what he should have done? He should have just drugged Sega fans.
I wish he'd drugged me, Tom. I wish he'd drugged me. And then when I woke up and was sort of a little woozy and suggestible, he could have said, oh, you're asleep, but you played a really great Sonic game before. And I'd go, oh, really? Yeah, it was really great. Oh, thanks. Can I play it? Yeah, you can play it again. Just drink this real quick. There you go. There you go. Honestly.
Sega specialty.
That comes up, like, what's next? Nintendo goes, oh, so we haven't made any good games for 10 years, guys. Sorry. We realize that you guys actually like Zelda or, you know, Metroid.
We realize that you guys Mario. Want a console that can actually do things and has games on it.
They're, I mean, yeah, Nintendo is about, like, I read an article the other day that basically said, they didn't say it outright, but they were basically like, look, our focus, they're going to shift wait for all of the next games to come out on the next console. Like, the Wii U is pretty much
dead. Already.
We're not going to get any big announcements for unreleased games on the Wii U.
Mm.
And, like, they've got a lot to do to win back fan trust.
And you know what,
they need to take a page out of the Sega book.
But companies have actually done it. I mean, we've seen it with Microsoft. There was so much hatred for the Xbox, and they've actually turned it around.
Yeah, so, it's not impossible, you know?
Just make a fucking decent game, Sega.
Or come Nintendo. On, Sega. Sega, come on! Do it! Just do it! look, let's after that, I need to calm down and to pour some water in my face. We're going to play a song, this is Pursuit, again from the Batman soundtrack, then we're going to come back and talk completionist stuff. Alright? Tom, let's see how many achievements you can get in this break. We'll be right back.
Here we go!
Okay, welcome back from that little breakaroni. Completionism, Tom. I feel like, let's jump straight into it, and I feel like we can't have a conversation, you and I, about completionism without just tackling the giant beast that you have under your belt, that is Gears of War 3.
Oh. I thought you were talking about the other beast under my belt.
You say, oh, like you're surprised, but that's got to be like the most intense thing you have 100%ed. Every single achievement in that game. The biggest, the main one, of course, being Seriously 3.0, which I kind of remember. What do you have to do for that? How many kills? How many?
Hundreds of hours.
Yeah.
Which is not, possibly close to 1,000 hours.
It'd be more, I was going to say more than hundreds of hours, surely.
Mm. Well, yeah.
I mean, Carlos spent over 100 hours just playing Gwent. You know? You like, Carlos, there was a period,
Gwent.
You played months and months of just grinding Gears of War medals.
Yeah.
You had to get Onyx at every single medal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some of them were just
6,000 kills with this weapon and that weapon, and then do it all backwards and up and down. But for me, that stuff, I find that kind of completionism really enjoyable because you've got a very basic premise, and it's just rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
You know, find a way to do this as quickly as possible, and then you get into a rhythm and you kind of lose yourself. Whereas then there's the different kind of completionism, which actually takes skill. I thought when you said my biggest thing under my belt was going to be the fact that I've 100%ed more games than you.
Which
I will bring up at every single opportunity.
I was looking at trueachievements.com the other day, which people don't know, it's a website that basically tracks
how much better I am than you.
It tracks your achievement. No, because I still have the higher number, so.
Yeah, gamer score.
Yeah.
I've still got more completed games than you, despite having a third of your gamer score.
This is a website that is totally for analytic nerds who like to.
Love their stats.
Like their stats. And what they do is they attribute true scores, I'm doing inverted quote, true scores, based on your achievements, because they'll assign a value to achievements based on how difficult they are to get. Mm. So some achievements out there might only give you 5 points. You know, you might only get a 5 point achievement for it, but like only 10% of the people who played that game might actually have that achievement. So it could be a rare achievement, so they'll boost the value of that, you know. And so, you know, it depends on what you look at, I guess. Because you have a higher ratio of games. But then, I don't think... Like, the most recent game you've played is Halo Master Chief Collection, and that's only because that's based on games that came out a decade ago. You know?
Yeah, well...
Whereas I play more games just because I'm better. What? At life and stuff.
What?
You
that's,
know?
That's ridiculous. That's...
Tom, this is an argument neither of us can win. So let's just focus on the games themselves.
Right.
I mean, what is it that drives you... There was definitely something between the two of us that we both sort of... We never really cared about achievements, and then we kind of got a little bit competitive about it almost, and it sort of...
And then we got carried away.
Yeah.
And I spent 3 years of my life on
Gears of War.
Gears of War.
Yeah. Yeah.
And decided afterwards never to do it again.
So has that put you off completing that sort of completionism thing in general? Have you lost that bug or that desire to 100% something?
I think there's a point now where I get to a game where if I'm not enjoying the grind, I will actually stop. Whereas, yeah. And it sounds silly, but there was a time when it was like, oh, well, you know, this is the game. I bought the game. I've got to play it. I've got to enjoy every single bit of it.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not actually enjoying it.
I know what you mean. Like, there is that sort of sense of, you know, games that are heavily based around completions, there's this sense of I have to finish this to get the value out of the product.
Mm.
You know, I definitely have felt that with some Assassin's Creed games. Mm. I mean,
does Lego come to mind?
Yes and no with Lego. The thing about Lego is, like, I really enjoyed some of those Lego games at completing them. I mean, I completed Lego Batman 2, you know, because those achievements, they're not... I like the achievements that reward persistence and perseverance, not necessarily like insane difficulty based achievements. And that had good achievements because it was collect all of these things, find all of these things, do all these things, you know, and I enjoyed doing that. But the problem with Lego games is that they don't change. They're the same game over and over and over again. So the next time a Lego game came out that I wanted to play, I thought, you know, I'll 100% this one too. And maybe a third of the way into that, I just sort of just got hit by this overwhelming sense of deja vu, and it was like, this is just homework, you know, I'm not enjoying this anymore. And it's because their formula hasn't changed. And I think that's why I took to the riddles in the Batman games so strongly, because I felt like there was a new spin on collectibles, you know. I mean, I'm enjoying them at the moment in Arkham Knight, but again, I'm just starting to hit this wall at the moment where it's like, I've done this before. You know, I've done these challenges in other Batman games. They were great when it was new and fresh, but now they're wearing thin. So it's sort of like, that's how I feel about collectible-based completionist stuff these days. You know, it was this great thing that every game took to. You know, they loved having their pick up your little memorabilia, documents you can read, audio logs, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I'm just past the point of caring now. Like, to me, I only collect that stuff in a game if it gives me something in game that I get value out of. Like,
really?
if I want to listen to... I mean, one of the main reasons I'm doing it at the moment in Batman isn't the joy of collecting, but they worked it into the narrative. So you unlock the true ending to the game when you finish off this last thing. Right. So I'm driven by this sense of, like, I've got to beat the Riddler.
Yeah.
You know, rather than I've got to collect all these things. If it was another game and I didn't have that investment, I probably wouldn't bother, I reckon.
See, one of the games that changed things for me was BioShock Infinite, where it had all these audio logs that you had to kind of find and collect. Now, the first time I played through that game, I did it all on a walkthrough because I only wanted to do one playthrough. You know, after I finished it, I was like, oh man, I could totally do this again. But that was kind of difficult for me because all of those audio logs are in order. And if I hadn't gone through with a walkthrough and listened to each of them in order, it would have been disjointed and really bizarre. Now, you played that without a walkthrough. Did you find that?
I would say so. I mean, like, I hate using walkthroughs on games like that first try. Like, I'll very rarely use a walkthrough. I'll only use a walkthrough on a game like that if I hit a wall and I go, you know what? I don't value the work that's required to do this enough to do it. Like, I'm happy to do the walkthrough just to get the end result.
Yeah.
You know, like, some games I find, like, you know, say Assassin's Creed, because it's just 100 feathers hidden everywhere, and I have 100% of Assassin's Creed 2, which is a lot of feather collecting. But you do just get to a point where it's like, you know what, there's no skill anymore in finding all of these feathers, because the game isn't designed to help you keep track of that stuff, so you use a map. In Bioshock, I wanted to get those collectibles, because they gave you cool little insights into the world, and I never wanted to know where they were, because it encouraged me to explore a lot, I'd say, in that game. And it's sort of, that was a game, even though it was a linear shooter, that was a game that really sort of encouraged you to want to look around corners and, you know, just pop into shops and environment. Stuff. Yeah. And that was a game, too, that rewarded you with great things you could find, not just, I mean, that's interesting, like, cause, I mean, completionism, people would mark by, collecting everything in a game. For some people, it's achievements. I would say a game like that, or another good example is The Witcher 3. A game like that isn't complete, I reckon, until you've experienced everything there is. Like, there are great little Easter eggs and hidden things in some games like that. Like in Bioshock Infinite, there's a moment in the first 10 minutes of the game where you look through, before the shit hits the fan, and you look through binoculars, and you can see the Lettice twins. They're juggling down the corner. You go out of the binoculars, look in the same place, and they're not there. There's all these great little hints of the whole world-traveling thing early on. And, you know, I love that sort of stuff. Same in The Witcher. There's, like, heaps of stuff that isn't connected to achievements or story progress or whatever. But just exploring, you'll find little quests, or you'll find stories, or you'll find things that add to the overall narrative.
This has been a difference between you and me for a long time. I don't like or get invested in open world games as much as you do. I find the lack of structure to be infuriating. You know, when there's a million options, then you're kind of frozen. You know, what do I do? I went through Skyrim, and there was a list of achievements, and ticked them all off, used the walkthrough for some, and by the time, I think I'd probably seen about 10% of the world, but I was done with that game.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in seeing any more, because there wasn't any structure there for me. For me, there has to be something, you know, a predetermined list that I'm ticking things off.
Yeah.
So
do you tend to use achievements as the sort of way of gauging completionism?
Yeah, achievements or game mechanics. I mean, as you said, collecting things, you know, even if there's not an achievement for reaching level 100, I'll still want to do it because it can be done. But
I think, like, depending on the game, because, for instance, Red Dead Redemption, I've got 100% in the single player, not the achievements. They have a lot of, like, nitty-gritty weird achievements and multiplayer achievements. But Rockstar are notorious for adding so many achievements, 5 points for annoying things you've got to do.
Yeah.
And I felt like I earned that 100% in single player, like collecting and finding every little thing and doing everything that I was comfortable to go, you know what, like, that's a completed game for me.
Yeah.
You know, multiplayer and that kind of stuff is like, I'll get out of that however much I want to get out of it, but I've completed this core component of the game.
Yeah. And it's funny how you can feel that way, because, I mean, again, with Skyrim, you know, when I say I 100%ed it, I 100%ed the base game. I haven't touched any of the DLC, you know. I don't want to. I'm happy with how much I've put into
DLC,
that game.
It's good DLC, mate.
Yeah.
Well, look, there we go. Let's play another song, then we're going to come back. I'm going to talk about a game that I think I am going to try 100%.
Ooh.
Until it gets hard. That is Batman Arkham Knight. You're on 2888.5 FM. All right. Welcome back. Before we get into Arkham Knight, a couple things coming in on Twitter. Old mate Buddy McKinnon has said that he played for close to 10 hours straight getting all the feathers in Assassin's Creed 2, only to give up. Time wasted. Buddy, you spent 10 hours trying to get 100 feathers in that game. Yes, you got to work a little bit harder, mate. You want to complete a game.
A bit of time efficiency.
You know, but I'm happy to give you some pointers, because I've done it. I've done it. We've got a friend of the show, Lee, from Geek Bomb. She's mad for completionism. She's getting all the shards in Dragon Age. She had to play through Lego Lord of the Rings twice because there was a Mithril brick glitch.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Lego games already basically force you to play them twice just to complete them. So that's four times, really, that you'd have to play that game. So, Lee, I'm sorry about that. That's a truly awful thing to have to go through. But look, let's go into Arkham Knight. And it's the final part in the Arkham trilogy, as they call it,
is conveniently
leaving out Arkham Origins, which they seem to do. You know, and it without spoiling anything, it is a pretty clear ending to the series, which I think is great, because in this age of sequels and
I think you're
ongoing series
totally naive if you think it's going to be the ending.
No, it's they wrap things up.
All right,
they
so wrap they kill up Batman.
No, but they wrap up a lot of.
If they don't kill Batman.
There's a lot of things that a lot of threads that I didn't expect to be picked up from previous games.
Right.
And looking at through that prism, it handles. It stands up really well to the other two. If you put them in a row, there's some great narrative through lines. A lot of characters who are in all of them, who have great arcs, characters like Oracle, you don't know any of that. Oracle, who used to be Batgirl until the Joker shot her in the spine, making her a paraplegic.
She's basically very nice of him.
No, it wasn't. This game builds on a lot of stuff that's there and just uses a lot of awesome Batman lore, you know? Stuff like, you know, mentioning Batman's past failures, like when the Joker killed one of his previous Robins, Jason Todd, and just like... The main villain in this game is Scarecrow, right? Okay. And Scarecrow's whole thing is fear.
Right.
And so this whole game, Batman is basically just having drilled into him all your fears of failure, all the times you've not been good enough, you know, how easy it is to bring the city to its knees, this stuff. It's great. It's a really great narrative. It's super dark.
Mm.
So, like, I mean, spoilers if you haven't played Arkham City, but it's an old game now. So that game ended with the Joker dying.
What?
Which was a big thing at the time. And a lot of people were like, ooh, is the Joker going to come back or whatever? This game starts off with a close-up of the Joker's dead face, and nothing happens. And you kind of go, after a while, you go, what's going on? You press a button, and you tap a button, and flames flicker on, and then flicker off. You press it again, they flicker on again. And you realize it's his body in the incinerate, you know, in the... And you hold it down and incinerate him. And that's how you start the game.
That's pretty dark.
It's really dark. And it's such a great way to be like, hey, look, Joker's dead. You know, we kill a character, they die, you know.
Until a reboot.
Now, the big thing in this game that seemed to polarize a lot of people, it's one of the big additions, is the Batmobile.
Mm.
And I'm a big fan of the Batmobile.
Well, to me, it was always such a great concept, you know, a car that could kind of do everything. But in practice, that doesn't work.
Yeah. So the big mechanic that a lot of people have problems with is, you know, a tap of a button, this Batmobile will turn into a sort of a tank, essentially,
right,
for combat. And it comes in handy because there is a lot of this mysterious character, the Arkham Knight, who is got a vendetta against Batman and is sort of basically... invaded Gotham, has full military troops, and so it does turn into war zones. And it is very jarring and different. Like, I think that in terms of pacing, there was a lot of tank combat, and until you've leveled up your Batmobile enough or you've gotten into the flow of it, it does feel quite odd when you're used to doing a lot more of the, you know, gliding around and Batman-y type stuff. But I really liked it because... it just, like, I feel like, I mean, in between Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Origins, I've done all the other Batman stuff, and so I enjoyed, like, I thought it was well enough designed. I enjoyed shooting stuff. The guns had weight to them. It's built around this whole sort of dodging enemy tank fire and then firing at them. And you had this cool Transformers kind of like feeling that if you do need to escape, you tap a button, it turns into the Batmobile, and you can just go and just, like, boost away like a boss.
Yeah, like, what was that sound?
The Batmobile has the most impressive growl.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say, like, the reason I love the Batmobile, right, is that anytime you ever see the Batmobile in the movies or whatever, you know, Batman, he just presses this little button, you hear this, like, intense, intimidating growl, and this beast of a vehicle comes plowing through, and Batman hops in and drives away.
Yeah.
And the game nails that. Like, you tap the left button, wherever you are, you hear this beep, beep, faint thing, and the Batmobile will come roaring away, drive into you, and Batman leaps into the cockpit as it drives under him and then keeps going.
I don't think that's very realistic.
But it feels cool. Or you dive off a building, aim at the ground, and press left bumper, and this little marker appears on the ground, the Batmobile will come driving in under you, and you'll land in it.
That's,
you know,
pretty cool.
They've done a lot to make the Batmobile feel imposing. Yeah. And one thing they've done that even bloody Rockstar couldn't do is, you know, you drive over a barrier, you smash that barrier because you're driving a fucking Batmobile. Drive through a statue, statue's gone.
What about trees, though? Trees are indestructible.
Most things that you would expect to break in this game, right. And it's great. The only things that really don't are environmental, like, you know, full buildings. Right. But even a lot of the awnings and a lot of pillars, in some instances, load-bearing stuff will break. And it's great, because I remember when we first watched one of the gameplay, you know, E3 demos of it, we thought these are very narrow streets that you're driving this fast, intense vehicle through. Mm. How are you going to do it without smashing stuff? And the answer to that is, you do smash stuff, but it feels cool. Because Batman would smash stuff. It's like in Batman Begins, when, you know, he first gets the tumbler, that Batmobile tank thing, and he's just smashing stuff. He's driving off rooftops and smashing cars and things as he goes through. And it's like, you're driving a tank, you know, this huge beast through a crowded city. You are going to smash stuff, and you do. And but it feels satisfying. It feels smooth. You feel like Batman. It's a part of the Batman mythos, and I feel like they nailed that. Yeah. Oh, it seriously growls at you, and it's a sexy sound. It is great. So, look, I had a great time playing this game, and as I said, I am trying to 100% it. There's some great rewarding story stuff you get for 100%ing it, and I think I'll probably do the New Game Plus through it as well. You know, some people really don't like the tank combat, to the point where I see them complaining a lot about it, and others say sort of the world feels a bit empty. I've seen that criticism. I quite like the world. I think it suffers a little bit from... You know, Arkham Asylum was such a focused game. You start in this very specific place. And so when you're backtracking through corridors and wings of the building. So you get to know the environments better. And it's from a design point of view, they can put more specific things in, you know, like play little tricks with you. Like you come back to an area and maybe there's something different about it. Because they know exactly what you as a gamer are going to see when you enter. Because this is a huge free roam game. They don't, you know, it is more open. They can't do that quite the same way, so sometimes it doesn't feel as focused, but there are some amazing things they fit in there. There's a lot of the best stuff about this game is the story, and there's a lot of stuff I just can't spoil because you've got to discover it for yourself. But all I'll say is there, you know, you've got characters like Scarecrow and stuff there, characters who can create hallucination type things. There are some awesome jump scare moments and some great instances where you're seeing things that aren't actually real or things don't exist. And it's subtle. Like sometimes you look at a billboard and you go, what the hell is that? It doesn't make any sense. Look away, look back, and it's not what it looked like the first time. And it doesn't draw your attention to it. It's just that you might catch the corner of your eye as you're gliding past it. It's there to be seen if you stop to look at it, but it's not too obvious. You know what I mean?
Is this a story that non-Batman fans or people who haven't played the first games can get into?
I think so. I mean, even if you just have a very peripheral knowledge of Batman, you'll know enough and the game will explain and set up enough that you'll be able to follow it. Because even though, you know, it does touch on a lot of comic stuff, it's still its own contained universe. Like, this is the Arkham universe version of these comic events. Mm. So it sets them up and frames them and helps you understand them. And it's just, it's a phenomenal, there's some phenomenal story stuff in that. So look, I heartily recommend it. I had a lot of fun and, I'm probably going to go home tonight, play it myself. Hey, How about you, Tom?
I'm just going to go home tonight and play with myself.
There we go. What an endorsement. Let's go to some messages and come back and say goodbye. Well, that's us for another week, Tom. Thank you for coming in. As always, Facebook, Twitter, BigHeadMode2RRR, and our website, BigHeadMode.com.au. That's also where you can go to find out about Bonus Stage, our monthly live gaming show we do at the Giant Dwarf Theatre in Sydney. We play a bit of music, we talk games, we have some laughs, and we all play games afterwards and just have a great bloody time. So go to bigheadmode.com.au, click bonus stage to find out more about that. Tom?
Vroom.
There we go. That's the Batmobile sound. And let's enjoy a little bit more Batman sounds with the Batman 1989 movie theme with a little bit of a twist. This is from Power Glove. We'll see you guys next week. Until then, I'm Batman. Rachel! Alfred, no!